All right. Here we are, part two of the Hendrix, and we have a new drink, even though we normally don't with a part two, but it's a fresh morning.
Right.
We're ready to go.
So I am caffeined.
Let's do our introductions, and then for our listeners, you will be very happy to know I do have mom sayings.
Woot woot. And hopefully you have enough to make up for the slacking.
No.
Yes.
No.
That's all right.
If you miss the chance, it's over.
Nope.
Okay.
This is Elena. You got me all frazzled. I'm all caffeined up. I've had nitro. I've had espresso.
Now we're having some tea. Go ahead, Mom.
This is Mom.
And I am Sherry. This is Outline of a Murder. And I don't know if people know this. I mean, they might know this from a past episode where we discussed her sugar, you know, love. But Mom is a sugar queen.
Oh, yes.
The exercise machine's arch nemesis. And the kitchen's reigning maestro. Our mom's got culinary magic with a sweet tooth twist.
Oh, I love that.
That was cute. Yeah. I do love my Ben and Jerry's.
And your Haagen-Dazs.
And your Reese's. And your cake.
Peanut butter.
And
your kind
bars. Nothing but cakes.
Reese's is the best.
Yes. All right, sister.
Okay.
Here we go.
Oh.
Sorry.
Sorry. Goodness.
It's not COVID. It's not flu. It was just something. Okay. It's
great.
Spit. Yes. So this is hot tea.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to bring countries and or city.
Very smart.
Guys, I am like buzzing like crazy. I'm sorry.
Maybe you shouldn't drink that tea.
No, we're doing this. So I have English breakfast.
I have super Irish.
I have breakfast in Paris.
Okay, let's give it a taste.
With milk.
You better get that down. Oh, what?
Not
what's
good?
The face?
Tastes like water.
Oh, wow. How strange. That's English breakfast. It's usually really hot. I mean, strong.
I think my taste buds are just like, if it's not espresso or nitro, they're like, eh.
You've seared them.
Right. Well, truly, because I like 180, 190 degrees.
Mm. How's yours?
It's just weak.
On a scale of 5, you're thinking a 3 or a 2?
Why are we 3. Scaling my drink? We hadn't scaled any drinks. Let's just move on.
You know, I did.
How about yours? Did you drink it yet?
Another, yeah, I did.
I'll drink it, though.
Mine has a good flavor, a little weak. I think the water probably could have been a little hotter.
I can taste lavender, though.
No, you're like fine.
2.5 minutes.
Oh, I had a kettle lavender I got from England I could have put on for the hot water. Takes 2 seconds. So nice. Susan bought it for me.
Well, maybe we can do it for one of your drinks. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very good. So thank you for stealing the tea from work. No, just kidding. It's called Stash. It's called Stash.
You're welcome that I stole that from work. They don't care. I did ask first, as I always do.
Or do you mean Whataburger? Because you like to steal their
tea.
Sweeteners.
Yeah, you guys should see all of the condiments. All of the Splenda.
Splenda.
Like, it's enough that you would think it came from like Costco or Sam's.
I get it.
And I ask, and they say,
I always ask.
A baggie this thick. It's like a small brick.
Right.
I get for Sherry before she comes.
Splenda tea.
She can't bring her own.
Klepto over there.
Whatever.
All right. So the Hendrix family murders. We're still on that and looking at the rest of the episodes.
Thank you.
You know, we'll probably be here for a little bit on those as well. Okay.
Your shirt is so cute. I just noticed the eyelashes.
Yes.
It is Taco
Day.
Quite
the arch of the eyebrows, but she's got some lipstick on too. I like it.
My prince's name is Taco Bell. That's cute. It's Taco Day. So we wear our taco shirts.
Now, we stopped at the last episode with the blood splatter where we know that the perpetrator was standing between the beds of the children. And then Susan, the mother's head was covered. I'm very curious on Rebecca, who's one of the daughters that had the least injuries. The reason that's fascinating to me, before we get into the stomach content, so,
yeah,
you know, beware. But what I find interesting about that is if it was a stranger-on-stranger killing, I'm not sure why Rebecca would have the least wounds, the least damage. But if we're talking about a, you know, homicide of a family by Mr. Hendricks, then was she his favorite?
Right.
Or his first?
I have, yeah, three questions about all that.
Okay.
Do they know when each one was killed?
They don't know the order of death.
Because I wonder if she was first and then he just went nuts. If he did it.
Right.
And your tone is neutral today. I like
it. Thank you. It probably won't last long.
Come on. Okay, a few questions. So I want to know, because one of the comments was he got up from bed, not woke up, but before he left at supposed midnight, he got out of bed.
Yeah.
So I want to know if Susan was naked, kind of defenseless.
They were all wearing their PJs.
Oh, okay. If the one that had the least wounds, you said, if she was the youngest, and were there any defensive wounds from her?
No defensive wounds on any of the victims.
She looked like she was the oldest.
But
I wonder if they were drugged.
I think Rebecca was the oldest. Yeah, Rebecca was the oldest. Huh, okay. And Grace and Benjamin were the babies.
So can you go to the picture? I'd like to see where Rebecca was standing.
Oh, she's the one on the left, I think.
Well, of course, sister.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's by the mom. Oh, no. Yeah, look.
Mm-hmm. Would that be her? I mean, she looks older to me than the other two.
And you don't see his hand on him.
Uh-uh.
Or he's got wife. A very large hand. My word.
If that's Rebecca, and then you've got Grace and Benjamin. We know Benjamin was a baby. I mean, she does look older either. To me, mm-hmm. but it. I mean, his hand is on her. It's not on his wife. It's not on any of the other children. Of course, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but that's interesting that you thought of that because she might have been a favorite, and that's why she had less wounds.
And she's the only one in the picture not smiling.
Right. The mom does have an odd smile, but I noticed that yesterday. I was like, huh. Okay.
Good
catch.
Observation. Let's see. I'm trying to get back to my page where I was at. I had a lot of writing.
Oh, and let me just say, right before I walked into the back door of the house when I left yesterday, I literally belched up watermelon.
Don't look at me. That's Sherry's deal. You and Sherry.
I immediately told my husband, guess what was done to me. And I'm just warning you, all of the tummies.
I'm sort of surprised
of what
that happened.
Oh, it was fine. Just caught me off guard a little. I'm shocked at what it did to my stomach.
I am too. You know, and I really, I cannot remember if it was Chrissy that didn't like watermelon or you. And so I'm like, well, I'm going to take a chance.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, obviously, that was dramatic.
I apologies. Will say, I would like to try the lavender. You've mentioned it over
really
a year.
Good. Yeah, when you come
lavender.
Visit me, we'll,
okay,
we'll do cool. that. Okay.
Although I do want to see you pour. I want to see you open the can and pour it into a glass.
Absolutely.
Just trust levels down.
Now, so we've got, you know, no fingerprints were found on the axe or the butcher knife. They did pull a few prints around the house. Two didn't have enough for comparison. One was Benjamin's palm print, you know, the little boy, which I could see, you know, little critters, they leave prints everywhere.
Sure.
And then there were two latent fingerprints lifted from the telephone receiver in the kitchen, and they were unidentified. Then there were two partial shoe prints, one from near the sliding glass door and the other from the floor between the kitchen table and the basement door were unidentified. So this is where we get into, okay, what is this? Is this evidence of an intruder? Are these people that have been in the house that, you know, a repairman or someone came by to use a phone? I remember back Mm-hmm. You know, in that time, people came to the house to use a telephone regularly if they didn't have one. That happened all the time at Grandpa's when I'd visit in the summer. And it would make me nervous because even from a young age, I was real vigilant on, you know, strangers. And, you know, so I can remember being like eight and on, and these people would come to use Grandpa's phone. And I'm like, are they going to kill us? You know what I mean? Like, I was definitely very vigilant. And I don't know why. My dad, he was very safety conscious. And so he taught me from a young age what to do if anyone tried to grab me. We lived in Odessa. You know, it was a rough town.
An oil field.
In fact, Otis Toole and the other poop bird that would kill people.
His cousin?
They killed a prostitute down the street from where I lived and left her in a field. So it was definitely a rough and tumble type of town. So maybe that's it, but I could see someone coming using the phone. They're not sure who it is. The partial shoe prints, though, now it's starting to erode a little bit my certainty of his involvement, right? So like I said, I've put these in orders. I'm leaning 90%+ that this dude is guilty as charged. But I'm not positive with things like this. Then the field supervisor for the Department of Law Enforcement testified that a burglary had not occurred on the scene. That's my mother taking photos.
Y'all look so good. I just had to take a picture.
Okay.
Beautiful. I just had to have some shots of you guys in action.
So he admitted that in some ways the scene was consistent with a burglary. He also stated that the scene was inconsistent with victims interrupting a burglary because all of them were asleep. They did not have defensive wounds, and their positions indicated that they were asleep when they were killed. From what I understand, they did not find any drugs. That's interesting to me.
Yeah.
But here's what I'm thinking, because no screams were heard either by neighbors. Children sleep very heavy. I personally think the mother was first because you're going to go after the mom. If you don't, and because we know this with the Jeffrey McDonald case, she, like he thought she was dead. Yeah. He went after her first, thought she was dead. She gets up and gets in her girls' rooms to protect them. And he had to kill her there and then take her back, right? Mm-hmm. So when you look at this situation, I'm thinking the mother's first. Yeah. So if you have the mother taken out, the kids are heavy sleepers. It doesn't take much to kill them. You go in there, you take care of one, and then you take care of the other two. Would they even wake up?
So,
especially with an axe.
Yeah. So what I would like to know or am wondering is, because he had an axe, if there was immediate like head wounds, because that would be the only way. Because if you were to stab anybody, you're going to wake up and start screaming.
We're going to get into Yeah, I agree with you. I think he went for the heads first, and the he being the perpetrator or the spouse.
Did it say how many times they were hit?
So we're about to get into that. Okay. So the autopsies on Susan Grace, Benjamin, and Rebecca were done November 9th. And they first go to the digestive organs because they need to know the window, right, of the murders because the time frame.
7.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So if they ate at 7, between 7 and 7:15, according to...
Poop Bird. Oh,
yeah.
Maybe.
Possible
maybe
Poop Bird.
Yeah.
Alleged. I'm not going to tell you how he got the contents, but we do know that, I apologize, but there were, 20 millimeters of thick greenish fluid, okay, and then early stages of decomp. Susan, and we'll get to the kid's stomach contents in a little bit. Susan received a severe blow to the left side of her head. The skull did not fracture, but it did bruise the brain. So remember, we discussed that in depth. Mm-hmm. There's either bruising, skull fractures, or both, and blunt force trauma.
So was there a cut?
Well, what I know and what I think he did is the flat side of the axe, which is actually important because, and this may sound disturbing, but I believe it was the prosecutors that brought this out. Most people that kill with an axe, they will use the flat side. How'd they put it? You want to use the flat side, and people that are thinking through the murders will do that because using the blade of the axe, it gets stuck. I don't know any other way to say it. And so they'll use the blunt force part of it. And that's what happened here. Because if it was the other, I think it would have caused more damage, and it definitely would have caused skull fractures.
Since it was on the side, she was probably sleeping on her side too.
I think so. So it was on the left side, and it forced the brain. So she was hit with enough force where the brain was forced upward and to the right. So she bled out inside her skull on the left side. Also, the muscles around her neck and voice box did show evidence of hemorrhaging.
Oh.
But when they examined the hyoid bone, she had not been strangled. But I'm sorry, she was like something occurred on her neck. You know what I mean? Like she may not have been strangled to death. The blow probably killed her, but there was some type of strangling. Sure. Uh-huh. So it made me wonder, like, was she strangled until she passed out? And then the axe blows. So the reason that's important, and, you know, I'm not a medical examiner, obviously. We're not detectives. But let's say that they get in a fight. So the kids are in bed. They get in a fight. Just like, what was the poop bird in Colorado's name that killed his entire...
Chris Knotts. Knotts?
No, I want to say Williams, but Chris...
Wasn't it Chris?
I'll get it.
So he... first strangled Shanna.
Mm-hmm.
Watts. Chris Watts. So he first strangled her and because they got in a fight. So there was intense rage. And so I'm wondering when he got...
defensive wounds, though, or scratches on him.
And she was on the side. That'd be a difficult...
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
And I would think he'd hit her first because then she would fight if she hit that was around her neck.
So how did she get those? Abuse?
Maybe he was, maybe she was still alive after she was hit and he was going to try to.
Yeah, you're right. Because there was no defensive wounds.
Was she, any signs of abuse to her? Because I'm
not that I could find.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Maybe he just, just thought she was alive. Want to do it quiet.
That's interesting. Like, could it have been a past? Like, they don't tell. They don't tell if it was past bruising. You know, like, why? I mean, if the voice box, everything, it shows evidence of
or
hemorrhage.
Was holding her neck for her head in place. So there was only one hit?
Oh.
Maybe.
I mean, he could have held her and
well,
then
no.
just...
Well, no. So after, there's 9 external injuries that were consistent with a sharp, heavy, axe-like weapon. Jeez. Death would have been caused by massive blood loss from the neck injuries or by the swelling of the brain. So maybe the neck injuries are not strangulation injuries, but from being hit with the axe.
Okay. Yeah.
But she would have been unconscious or dead within 20 minutes.
Nine?
Mm-hmm. That's
rage.
So
blow to the
head. Overkill.
Yeah.
Wow.
So again, that lends to someone that knows her versus a stranger.
Yeah.
However, Ted Bundy, I mean, he had tons of rage. When you study serial killers, they're full of rage. That's why they do it.
Right.
So I can't discredit a stranger on stranger. It's just so rare for a family to be murdered, an entire family like that. But, I mean, we've got the whole Kansas death that Capote wrote that book on in Cold Blood. They killed the entire family. So,
BTK.
Yep. He killed the entire family. Yeah. So definitely can happen. So I probably need to
and it's rare
walk
it's
that
an
back
out,
a little.
A rare it's an outsider.
It is rare,
but on this
but it
case,
does happen.
When I was listening to it, you know, I thought he was guilty, but we'll see at the end.
Yeah. Then we have the Chuck E. Cheese thing. Remember, so they would stamp the children with that little Chuck E. Cheese stamp. So they did have that on their hands. So the autopsies on the bodies of the children, they definitely had wounds consistent with the axe and the knife. Now, in their stomach contents from each child, they had heavy particulate matter that smelled like pizza. And then they had readily identifiable pieces of mushroom, green pepper, tomato, and onion. Mm-hmm. So what that means is they did not have time to digest their food. That means to me they were killed a lot earlier, and I'm wondering if they were dead by the time the mother got home.
Oh.
But she went to... No, I don't think so, because moms would have gone in...
You could cover them up. It's
dark. But they
weren't
covered, were they? And where were their injuries?
I don't know if they were covered.
Yeah, the injuries were on the head, right?
If it's dark, you kind of peek in, or he says, oh, no, they're already asleep. They had a rough time. Let's just go to bed. I would, if I came home and I was assured Kent was in bed, I probably would not. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But they didn't have time to digest. And so basically... They didn't have, well, and then when he did the stomach contents, he made sure they didn't get contaminated with other, you know, contents in the intestines and stuff like that. There were no evidence of disease or abnormalities. So Rebecca was seven, nine, and then Grace was seven, and the little boy was five.
So she is the oldest. How long does it take to digest, though, especially a
child?
We're going to
get into that. Okay. Yeah. And none were sexually assaulted, thank God, and none of them were strangled. Okay, so a lot of that is where the crux of the guilty or not guilty is in, and that is with the food.
Mm-hmm.
Because, so they had, you know, forensic scientists, pathologists that testified that the, you know, the approximate time of death based on the food contents. So all the children, all the material from the children's stomachs tell a doctor, Baden and Davis, that there was very little active digestion from the time they ate pizza to until they died. The vegetable material was fresh, and there was tiny little bits of eroding on the edges. So nothing had really started.
Yeah.
He pointed out that sometimes you can have severe emotional trauma, strenuous exercise, and then some physical diseases that can delay digestion. So some people are like, okay, well, they ate fast and then they went and played.
Yeah.
But other experts are like, no, it's not enough of a difference it wouldn't add anything. So like if they were active, it would have slowed down digestion so minutely that you wouldn't really notice that. You know what I mean? Like the time frame wouldn't have been impacted.
I would think that it would be opposite. Mm-hmm. You go and play, metabolism kicks in.
Me too.
I think maybe the reason that could be an issue is when you eat, your blood goes to your digestive organs. And so when you're playing, your blood is going out front.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why a lot of times they say don't eat a heavy meal before you work out, because your body will expel the meal because it can't give the blood flow that's needed to digest while you're training.
Oh, didn't know that. That's a good little fact.
Yeah. And so you have to, you know, either not eat too much or
eat after.
Eat after. Mm-hmm. So I could see that. Excuse me, it would slow it down. Now, Baden, he said that the pizza eaten would have been completely digested within 3 to 4 hours. So in his opinion, the children died after 3 p.m. before 11:30.
Okay.
After what? 3?
After 8:30. I'm sorry. Before 11:30.
After 8:30, before 11:30.
And he left at 9.
No. He initially said he left at 10:30.
No, the neighbor saw him actually leave.
Oh, yeah. That was at 9. Mm-hmm. Now, she got home at 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
So, I could see them being alive when she got there and already in bed, but I could also see them being dead when she got there.
Well, yeah, because the neighbor saw him earlier before she got home.
Yeah, at 9 leaving. What was, like, why did he leave? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. And she wasn't home yet.
Mm-mm.
So he had to have come back.
And that wouldn't have bothered me as far as him leaving his children to run a quick errand because, you know, they're 9, 7, and 5. I personally did not leave Kent until he was 10 because that was the law. And it was for a very short, like maybe 10, 15 minute deal.
You know, we don't have any law here about that in Texas.
Wow.
There's no age. And so they got home. He wouldn't have been, so he didn't kill him before he left at 9 because he wasn't bloody or anything.
He would have been covered in blood.
Yeah.
And she wasn't home yet.
Nope.
So he had to come back.
Yeah, he came back. We just don't know what he did. Where did he go at 9? Maybe he forgot something at the store. Maybe he wanted to go get something to cover him up before he killed his family.
Maybe the kids were dead first.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And then Baden said that he's performed 15,000 autopsies and examined gastric contents in every one. And then for over 2 years, he specifically studied gastric emptying time and digestion. And so he examined samples, you know, of the contents, et cetera. He said that they would have had their last meal approximately 2 hours prior to their deaths and had died at approximately the same time. So again, if they ate at 7 to 7:15, they go get their library books, he gets them in bed between 9 and 9:30, they were already asleep, you know, because we know from the autopsy. So did he wait till they went to sleep, went in there, killed them, or again, did he wait for the wife to get home? I think that the 2 hours prior to their deaths is pushing it just a little because, you know, he gets them in bed. They're not going to go to sleep immediately. They had been, you know, goofing off, playing.
Hyper.
Mm-hmm. Were they hyper? Which kids do that. Like when they're tired, they're more hyper. You would think they would be worn out and just crash. Sometimes they do, but it was my experience with they had, you know, pizza,
and Coke.
Played, Cokes, all that stuff. You were lucky to get him to sleep within like 45 minutes.
So I know that there was no drugs found in them, but what about like over-the-counter type things like NyQuil, something like that? Because that would make sense if he went to the store to get those
things. I don't
even
know if they examined that. I'm thinking that if they did have NyQuil or something, that it would be in their stomach because he would have given it to them not long before they died.
Yeah.
Plus in the 80s and 90s, who knows how thorough they were.
Exactly.
Well, he was an expert. So I would think that he would have seen that and noted that.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely sounded like an expert.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. We don't need this to be a three-parter.
Right.
No.
Right. Now, the defendant presented 5 experts on the same question. So we have several that have the same, you know, background, maybe not as extensive. They did not believe that gastric analysis is useful in determining exact time of death. He gave his opinion that the deaths could have occurred as early as 9, but as late as 2 a.m. Rose testified, one of the doctors, that gastric analysis could be used to establish broad ranges of time during which death could have occurred, but they were relative to the start of the digestive process. So it's just not reliable. Each body is different.
Hmm.
So he stated that the children died. Another doctor stated that the children died before 12, but it is possible that they died between 12 and 2. But another doctor thought it was less possible that they died between 2 and 4. So in other words, we've got a time frame between 8:30 and 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And the prosecutors, I remember they talked about that. They talked about professional experts that, you know, originally maybe it wasn't well thought out and you do need to have experts to argue the evidence. But what happens is you're paying these people to testify for the defense or for the prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
So the prosecution, typically they're state employees. They're the ones that originally found the evidence. They're going to analyze it based on that. They're not paid. That's part of their job. But they may bring in expert testimony because they know where the defense is going to go. So they're going to pick their expert testimony based on whether it fits their theory.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have 2 sets of experts that are arguing with one another, it has to be canceled out. I can't take any of the gastric contents as a factor.
No, you can't.
So I was also thinking about personalities because, to give you an example, Sherry, you're more yes or no.
I am.
Mm-hmm. Me, I can be, depends on the subject, but also vague isn't a good word, but like, for instance, in the professional, the profession that I do, you really, or I choose not to be super specific. Like, you may be, it's possible. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And so I would think personalities would play a part in it, because there was one that gave a testimony that said, it just used vague words.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, that's an interesting point, because I don't do well with vague. You know what I mean? Like, I either need to know or don't tell me. Like, it needs to be, like, I need concrete.
Yeah.
And now that's, I'm definitely more, I would say, flexible than my early years, but that's literally how my brain processes. I remember when I was working for Gail, I, like, she would tell me things, and I would be very regulatory, you know, because she said to do it this way. And so that's how I'm going to do it, because it's her business and I don't want to ruin it, right? And but then over time, when I got more sure, I could get my own processes and they worked. So I get that. I don't like maybes. I don't like probables.
Yeah.
I like, when are we going to do this? Where are we going? What are we going to do when we get there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I got to say, I do. I trust the first one.
I do too.
Okay.
I do too, just because he had how many? 15,000 autopsies. Yeah. So I don't know if our listeners are going to agree, but I'm going to go with between 8:30 and 11:30. Mm-hmm. And the other reason I'm going to go with that is because he kept changing when he left. Mm-hmm. Why would you keep changing when you left? Because he knew everybody was dead before he left, right?
Yeah.
So if he's the killer, he knew they were dead at this time. So he needed to be out of the house because of decomp and all of that stuff before. You know what I mean? Like, he needed to hurry up, get them killed, and get out of there.
You know what's interesting, though, is that he made his time later and later. I would think that he would have done it earlier and earlier.
That was a question I had as well. So, because I'm like, well, gosh, you would think that if he did it, he would have said, I left as soon as she got there, kissed her, said goodbye. That was a question I had as well. I had that thought.
Okay.
What do you think, Mom?
I'm still not swayed yet, but because there's not really any really concrete evidence against him.
Mm-mm. But I mean, I'm with you.
But then on the other hand, like I said earlier, usually these cases with children and the whole family are usually inside.
Yeah. Now, all of them pretty much agreed. You can't really tell time of death just from stomach contents. And I like that they were all like, you really can't. I mean, these are estimates. It's not, it's, you know, it's our opinions. And that's why you need experts. Because if I was to come in and say, I've read like 500 books on stomach contents and time of death, but I'm not an expert. I'm not a doctor. I've not conducted autopsies. So that's why you have experts, so that their opinion carries weight. And that's why they're held to higher standard. So when you have Dwayne Deaver, who is going to have, you know, Michael Peterson contort into unnatural body, right, you know, positioning to get this one, okay, we found out how he did it. And then he is obviously 34 cases where he, you know, did this. That's all retrials. So they have to make sure that their experts are actually experts, and they have to make sure that they're not doing crazy stuff like that. So here's where the motive comes in from the prosecutors on why he did this. And I don't agree with the prosecution. A number of witnesses said that the defendant changed lifestyle and increased sexual assertiveness, religious beliefs, and marital situations led to the victim's death. Okay, so remember they were Plymouth Brethren.
Mm-hmm.
Susan, and we can see her. She was quiet, reserved, unstylish. Sorry, Susan. She always wore dresses or skirts. She did not style or perm her hair. She did not wear jewelry other than her wedding ring, and she never wore makeup.
Right.
That was their religious bent.
Okay.
Okay. Then you have him. He's wearing a suit jacket. His collar's open on his button-down shirt. He even almost has a little bit of a cocky look on his face, like he's, you know, pretty self-assured. So the defendant was outgoing, friendly. He jogged. He greeted new neighbors. He helped out. So you can kind of see this picture of an outgoing, charismatic man married to a
homely
dead
fast
wife. You know what I mean? So where maybe opposites attract as time went on. And here's another thing, and I can say from personal experience. When you reach a, like when you, I believe, as a couple, reach a certain stage. So it's like when you're young, you're scrappy, you're trying to feed your family. There's like this camaraderie, right?
I love that clock. You know, I get a lot of compliments.
From strangers, even.
Uh-huh.
And it's the only one that has the two cuckoos for one.
You're lucky the birds aren't working. I turned it off. Because after this, the birds play in a circle around the...
I mean, we could keep going, Sherry. It's a very long, boring pause. Just saying.
Whatever. Okay. So you're scrappy. You're trying to build a life. And then you reach a certain point where you have the things you want. And I read in a book the other day that as people get to their goals, financially, materially, whatever it is, they actually, like, they can freak out. They can start getting scared they're going to lose everything, or they the relationship isn't as much of a camaraderie. It's more we've, you know, arrived. They can get comfortable. Often that's where you see the midlife crisis happen with relationships. I say all of that to say he's at a level of success. He has built a very successful business. He's obviously good at what he does. So he has to have a personality that's friendly, that people trust, be able to, you know, he's smart. He has this invention that was very successful. And so if he did this, did he reach a place where he didn't want the wife and the children that he had?
Yeah, and he is attractive, and they don't look like they match.
No, they don't.
But you know what? Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
However, I have noticed that obviously, if I would like to see a picture of them when they were younger, first got together.
Can't find it.
Right, because... So, you know, usually one or the other starts kind of, I mean, typically your looks are going to change, obviously, just from aging. Who knows what you're going to end up looking like or your spouse is going to end up looking like. But also, typically, from what I've seen, one starts taking better care of themselves and the other one doesn't.
Yes.
Or gets into a rut and the other one progresses in style and whatnot.
But I don't think he was going through anything because... He had a lot of freedom. I mean, he was gone weeks and sales, and he didn't have to kill her.
A week
out of the
month.
Yeah. So.
Interesting that he had the airplane, the motorcycle.
But we'll get into the reasoning of why he might have killed him. Again, I'm not sure I necessarily agree with the prosecution. And again, we're discussing, you know, is he guilty or not guilty, and giving our opinions. But yeah, I'm wondering if things started shifting in the relationship because of success. You see it all the time.
Yep.
But he was successful before.
Not before
he sold his business.
Not this level. Like he's reaching the you know, the height of his success.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm saying. Is he at the height of his success and he's deciding he doesn't want the things that he's had in the past as far as family. But We don't know.
Right.
But he also, they said his appearance started changing. In 1981 and early 1982, defendant was overweight, wore a mustache, ill-fitting clothes, and was greasy-looking and had unstyled hair.
Polar opposite.
In 1983, he was 40 pounds thinner, styled his hair, did not wear a mustache, and wore better-fitting clothes. The people presented a number of witnesses who recounted their experiences with him in preparation for modeling his orthosis. Okay, so initially, his conduct was very professional. The fitting sessions were brief, and they were conducted in the presence of others because it's a back brace. Okay, so you can imagine, you know, areas that would be, you know, a little sensitive. In the spring of 81, a Diana Payne and Cindy Baird Segobiano said that the defendant started requiring partial nudity and started measuring and marking the model's torsos. Then by March of 83, he would meet models outside office hours. Kathy Harper testified that she met him at the at his office in the late afternoon, and he told her that she would need to remove her outer garments and bra for a proper adjustment of the brace. He then complimented her on her figure and inquired about her social life. Then in the summer of 83, he approached a Nancy Jarrett at 5:30 at her apartment. She didn't know him, but she did agree to model for him and agreed to a fitting session later that evening. Although her apartment is on the second floor of the building and sheltered from outside view, he closed her draperies and he told her that she would need to be topless and make and he would need to make multiple marks beneath her breasts and on her torso. Then in the late summer of 83, he approached a Leanne Wilmoth at her apartment at 8:30 in the morning. She agreed to model as well. So again, it tells me he puts you at ease. And he said that the fitting session would be necessary and that he needed to measure her while she was wearing only panties. She was uncomfortable with the prospect, so she wore a bathing suit bottom and long robe. Defendant opened the robe and made several marks on her torso. While she was modeling a leotard, a leotard for him. Why the heck was she modeling a leotard? He remarked that she had an asymmetrical frame. So she was laying on the bed and he ran his fingers over her torso and massaged her shoulders and neck, touching her breasts. She rebuffed his attempt to kiss her. He repeatedly apologized, returning once to her apartment to do so after.
Let me just say,
why is she modeling her leotard?
Why is she laying down? These women were uncomfortable. So if you guys are uncomfortable, your gut's telling you something. Don't do it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if the other women were.
Two were.
But this one definitely was. And then she noticed that he closed the blinds. I don't know if she was uncomfortable, but the last one was.
And later they said, too, that you didn't have to be nude for the brace. And a couple times he didn't even use the brace.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to be nude at all. I mean, it goes on and on. In October of 83, a Carla Webb, he met her at 7:15. He strapped the cash brace on over Webb's leotard and then told her it would not fit properly. She stood straight and defendant told her the brace would fit, but she needed adjustment because of her good posture. So then he assured her that nude fittings were standard procedure and she would be treated the same as any other patient. So she removed the leotard. She donned a hospital gown. He made at least 25 marks on her back with a felt tip pin. She reversed the gown and then the defendant made at least 20 marks on and around her breast. She stopped the Mr. Hendricks, who was perspiring and would not make eye contact with her as he started to mark the center of her breast. He then strapped the brace on her and told her she had scoliosis. He then touched her breast and attempted to kiss her. After she rebuffed him, he told her that he was a good Christian, that his wife could not find out, and that perhaps he could take her to Kentucky in his plane. He asked her to call if she wanted to talk, and then he contacted her several times.
So he's progressing, even in mm-hmm. what he's asking his supposed models to do, less and less clothing. And by the way, that's not a good Christian to apologize, don't tell my wife, but I'll take you on the plane.
Yeah.
He would eventually probably rape someone, if not kill them.
I think eventually. So. And then same month, he was at a convention in Phoenix, and there were two that he recruited to model. And so they went to his hotel room. He had them remove the leotard, the bra, hold their arms out, made multiple markings, the same thing. And then he told one of them that he was a physician and that she had scoliosis and that a massage would help. So he massaged her back and left breast, and when she became nervous, he strapped on the brace over her clothing, and then she was like, I'm done.
May I just say, breasts have nothing to do with bone structure or scoliosis, so.
Yeah, yeah, you don't have to massage the breasts for the scoliosis. So then he had the other lady, wanted her to remove all of her clothing. She wrapped herself in a towel. She opened the towel. He does the marks on her breasts and hips. He told her to drop the towel. He also told her that she had scoliosis and that could temporarily be corrected by massaging. So he had her lay down on the couch. He massaged both sides of her torso, but he did not touch her breasts. So then he told her name was Tomlinson, that he had been raised in a very religious household and had studied scripture, but he was having serious doubts as to the validity of his non-denominational beliefs, and because of these doubts, he was no longer practicing his faith. Mm. He also said on a sightseeing tour with her that he had had several extramarital affairs, but he believed it was harmless as long as his wife did not find out.
Hmm.
So she rebuffed his attempts at kissing her, and he apologized. And he said, well, since you wouldn't let me up on the mountain, can I at least fantasize?
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, this goes on and on and on.
Wow.
There was a Lawrence Macy testified that he'd been a member of the Brethren, the Church of the Brethren, which is the same denomination, for 46 years. He had known the defendant since he was a child. And he said the Brethren believed a marriage may not be dissolved except in situations of adultery or abandonment. And the non-offending spouse could then seek a divorce. So in other words, if you're the one that commits adultery or abandons the spouse, you cannot seek for a divorce. The one who's the victim is the one who can seek for a divorce. So it would have been up to his wife to seek the divorce, not Susan.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry, not him. Mr. Hendricks.
I wonder if divorce was discussed.
I don't know, but that's actually a very biblical stance. Mm-hmm. So if one of the brethren suspects that another is engaging in adultery, he goes to the brothers who initiate an investigation. So it may be a panel of brothers or all of them in the assembly. The case is then presented to the entire assembly, and then they determine if the defender can remain in fellowship or must be excommunicated or set aside.
Is the assembly the entire congregation, or is it a
I'm wondering. I think it's a group of men.
Okay.
And so if you're set aside in the Church of the Brethren, you cannot socialize with the other members. And in extreme cases, depending on the church, not even your parents or extended family members.
Okay.
Wow.
So they're trying to say that the motive is he has had several affairs or attempted to have several affairs, and that he knew that if it came out that she was divorcing him or he approached that he wanted to divorce, that then there would be this public church situation going on and that he would be excommunicated and shamed.
So you have that for sure, especially if he was raised in that his mm-hmm. whole life, but also finances too.
Yes. So I'm not sure what Illinois, Indiana, Because I think they were in Illinois. I'm not sure what their laws are, if they have the community property, but because they were together and building the business, she probably would, like, she would probably come out well as far as, what is it called, alimony and child support.
And it was in the 80-90 time, too, so
and they she were probably would have gotten the kids.
Sympathetic to the women.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if the finances were more a role actually than the religious, because the religious might show that there was adultery, which would solidify her case against him if she decided to divorce him. But we don't know. We don't even know if she knows that he was having affairs. But if he wanted to get out of the marriage and then it came out, that would be evidence for her in a divorce proceeding to where she could get more money. Because she was a homemaker and she was taking care of the kids. She had no work skills. So she was for sure going to come out better. But could she have gotten half of the business because her role was at home while he built it, but the law considered her a partner? So I would actually think the financial aspect would be more because he was not sure his faith was legit, right? So I'm not sure he actually had faith at this point or would have cared.
We also, oh, go ahead.
Well, and he couldn't, you know, a lot of people might say, why didn't he just kill the wife then? But if you want to set something up, you'd have to kill the whole family, but not he, just the
yeah,
wife.
And he would have been straddled with children,
yeah,
right?
You'd so, have
right.
to kill all of them.
Also don't know that religion, how divorce even works. I mean, obviously, it's very clear that in that religion, she had grounds. She would need to file or pursue it or whatever. But as far as the finances, what that looks like after, who knows what that religion mm-hmm. dictated.
Well, and I'm not sure the religion could dictate that aspect, because if they go through a divorce, that will be the courts that will decide.
No, that's not what I meant. I just meant like the beliefs, what she would have pursued, what she wouldn't have pursued.
Exactly. Because, you know, if he was repentant and he appeared like everything was, you know, cool, she might have forgave him, or would she have even requested a lot of money? Mm-hmm. You know, she seemed like a very sweet person, so I don't know if she would have.
And submissive, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, they had a number of people saying
that's crazy, and the same thing over and over and over.
Oh yeah, so he was definitely getting aggressive. And what was also interesting is he would tell the models that this was for advertising, and then when they get there, he needed to research because he was developing another brace. Now,
interesting. They all believed him.
Mm-hmm.
He denied telling. Like he did say he hugged one of them. He denied saying that he wanted to, you know, he thought it was fine as long as his wife didn't know. He denied the massages or telling anyone that he was a doctor. He denied the conversation about his marriage or religion. He denied the sexual overtures and attempting to kiss him, of course. He did admit being attracted to Webb and Wilmoth and agreed that he might have told them he was a good Christian. He did remember pulling the draperies. But he thought the drivers might be able to see into the apartment. He said that he and his family participated in many activities, including trips, that he and Susan were happily married, and they never contemplated divorce or separation. Now, here's why there were hardly any fingerprints. On November 7th, Susan cleaned the house. So that's why there was hardly any evidence whatsoever as far as other prints. But what that tells me is if there was an intruder in the house, you would have definite something. If they touched something, if they cleaned up, if they touched the sink knobs, if that there would be something that would be contrary, but not as many fingerprints, etc., of the family because she cleaned.
Wasn't there some in the basement, you said?
The door going to the basement, yeah. I think.
But here's the thing. So she cleaned on the 7th. They were murdered on the 9th. There were no family fingerprints except the little boy's palm print, and there were a couple of unidentified mm-hmm. other ones. So that could point to an intruder.
It could. Yeah.
Because that's only 2 days.
How he would think, though, that anyone would believe out of all the women, they're all lying but him.
I know.
All of them.
So a number of character witnesses testified for his behalf, and they say that the defendant and his family had an excellent relationship, never physically punished the children. Susan and he had a loving relationship. They said he had an exemplary reputation for truth and honesty. They said that he actually lost the weight for health purposes and that he had received a coupon for free hairstyling. He said that he lost weight on the advice of a doctor, so he purchased his new clothes from discount shops, and he styled his hair because he had had that free coupon, that he never dyed his hair, and that he shaved his mustache as an anniversary surprise for Susan.
Has a doctor come forward and said that he had to lose weight?
Not that I know of.
I don't believe that one.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't either.
Excuse me.
Now, they believe, so a Petty, let's see, I'm not sure who Petty is, she agreed with Rahman's testimony as to the children's injuries and cause of death, but one of Susan's injuries could have been caused by an unknown knife and that she may have been manually strangled. Petty concluded that four weapons had been used on Susan: an axe, a knife, the perpetrator's hands, and an unknown knife. So what that tells me is there was another knife used that was not at the end of the bed with the axe and the other knife.
Didn't you say there was, is this the one where there was a butcher knife missing?
No, there's no knives missing as far as I know, but so this is for the defense. So the reason they're bringing up these multiple weapons is they're trying to say there are multiple assailants.
Mm-hmm.
That
didn't make sense.
Not on the same body.
Yeah, I don't buy it. I don't buy it at all. And then a forensic scientist testified that a burglary had occurred, but he did admit that some elements of the scene were inconsistent, so he couldn't for sure say whether it was staged or not. And then Baden, the one that had the 15,000 autopsies, in a rebuttal, said that her injuries were consistent with the axe and knife found at the scene. The defects in her nightgown and bedspread could have been caused by the tip of the knife. He did not find any evidence consistent with the conclusion that she had been strangled. And then they did a test drive. So Officer Michael Scott testified that he made a test drive from defendant's home to Stevens Point, Wisconsin, where he had gone. He did not stop, and he observed all traffic signals. That trip took him 5 hours and 45 minutes. At trial, the defendant said that he left at 11 and arrived at 7, stopping for no more than 45 minutes. So that would have given him 7 hours and 15 minutes of travel time, with a net difference of an hour and 20, meaning he had an hour and 20 minutes of time they can't account for. And so that, you know, means that he would have had plenty of time to commit the crimes, clean up, and get on the road.
Yep.
It's just weird, though, that no DNA was in his car. There's always something.
Yeah, but he was one of those that was very thorough in his cleaning.
Well, I mean,
and the drains.
Well, they found blood. They just couldn't determine, okay, was it cleaning products? Remember, she cleaned.
Yeah, yeah.
So is that what was showing up, or was it blood in the luminol testing?
Mm-hmm. Thoroughly, because the handle was thoroughly. You kept using that word, thoroughly cleaned.
Cleaned, yep. So he might have killed Susan first, gone to the children's rooms, killed them, walked across the hall to the bathroom, cleaned up very thoroughly, because he seems to be thorough in his measurements, etc., and then got in his car and took off.
How much blood, again, was found between the kids in the bathroom?
It seemed like there was quite a bit.
Oh, okay. And I was thinking drops.
And pretty copious amounts showed up in the luminol in the bathtub.
Okay.
And then a smear on the vanity counter, and then some in the sink.
Now, there were no, was that found with the luminol, or was it, okay.
It had been cleaned.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, so he was convicted. Okay. He was convicted. This is him in his jail cell. But they did an appeal, which is where we got most of the facts of the case from those court documents. And one of the things that was hotly contested and grounds for appeal was the expert testimony of the estimates of the probable times of death and the reasonable doubt necessarily created in the circumstantial evidence, which was the disputed testimony. Like I said, that they canceled each other out. I wouldn't be able to rely on the expert testimony, because even though Dr. Baden had 15,000 autopsies, the other experts were also extensive in their skill and their expertise. It's not an exact science. And so I do think common sense is they didn't have hardly any time to digest their food. If you have vegetables in their stomach contents that barely had started any digestion at all, I'm sorry.
Common sense.
It's not going to be 2 a.m.
Yep.
But it's not going to be as strong of a factor. And then they also questioned the experts and their ability to testify based on their experience, et cetera. And so that was brought up as well. And that there is a dispute in the scientific community about the reliability of this method in determining time of death. Quote, all the experts here agreed that gastric analysis may not be used to state precise time of death or to state a narrow range of time during which death occurred. The experts agreed that there was a dispute in the scientific community as to how useful gastric analysis is in determining a time of death. However, the state's experts, Davis and Baden, did not state a precise time of death, but they posited a range of time during which death occurred. The defendant's experts stated the range was too narrow, and variables precluded correlating digestion and gastric emptying with a specific time frame. Biden Davis stated that in the instant case, the average range applied because of variables, which ordinarily might retard digestion, could be eliminated. Similarities in the children's samples reduce the possibility of individual digestive quirks. In other words, all the kids were pretty much the same, meaning there's not any variability here.
That's a good point.
Yeah, they were all, you know, they ate at the same time. They died at the same time. The defendant's experts admitted that the only variables which might apply were exercise and unknown. Defendant's experts' opinions about exercise as a delaying factor were impeached and contradicted by the states. Then he argued that conceding the expert testimony establishing a probable time of death, all of the state's evidence established his mere presence at the scene of the offense and opportunity to commit the murders. He says that relying upon four cases, that mere presence at the scene of offense is insufficient to support a conviction. So what they're saying is, just because I was there didn't mean I did it. Stop. You know what I mean? Stop. If you're there at the time
talking to you.
Of right. death, you did it.
Yeah.
Don't be ridiculous. Not only that, but your presence and opportunity are counted as legal evidence. People don't know that. So when they're looking at the body of evidence, like we discussed with Scott Peterson, you being there and having the opportunity to kill, that is considered evidence.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't know that. I didn't know that. They also believe that the murders were pre-planned and carefully executed, and they said it would have been impossible for him to have kissed the victims goodbye before he left and not notice they were dead.
Yep.
So remember he said he kissed them goodnight. So there's no way you would have been in the house and they were murdered, and then you go kiss them goodbye and you don't notice their heads bashed in.
Can you make that bigger? That's a lot of pictures.
Yeah. Is whose like pictures?
I have no idea.
I wonder if he drew them.
Mickey Mouse and stuff. So maybe his kids drew them. I don't know.
Mustache right there.
They also said it was questionable that the victims were alive. And then covering his wife's face, one child had a less attack. That was considered significant as well. He said the judge stated that he intended no criticism of the jury or its verdict. However, he could not sentence the defendant to death unless he was personally convicted of his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. So even the judge had a little bit of doubt.
Right.
And so he didn't convict him and sentence him to death. He did specifically state that he found the evidence legally sufficient to reach the jury. He also didn't feel the defendant's motions for directed verdict at the close of the state's case was warranted. So the judge, they point out, even the judge is like, I'm not sure. He also, they're like, changes in lifestyle, how is that evidence?
I think so.
I do too. He also said that the evidence needed to have an established motive, and the defense didn't view religious ideas as enough motive, which I don't agree with that as a motive either. I think it was probably money. Now, they said that the motive was very broad. The state said his change of lifestyle, his increasingly aggressive conduct with the models, his change appearance, his religious tenets on marriage, extramarital affairs, divorce, that all of these things led to him killing his family. The testimony of the models solidified that. They felt like the change of appearance was a change of lifestyle, and his increased contact with models, that maybe he wanted to be free and footloose. And so that's where they decided that was a motive. He did get let out, by the way. He won his appeals.
Oh.
He's a free man.
So what year was the conviction? What year was the appeal?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
So they retry him?
1 second.
No.
Keep going on. I want to look that up.
Mm-mm. They did not retry him. Now, let me see if I have any notes from... No, I don't have any notes from the prosecutors. But yes, he was let out.
And does it say how long he was in prison for?
No, hopefully Elena can find out. Oh.
Yeah, he was convicted in 84, acquitted in 91.
Oh, acquitted?
Mm-hmm. Oh, so he must have had a second trial then.
He had to have a second trial.
Yeah, a retrial, sorry. Acquitted okay. And a retrial.
So 91. There was a retrial. Since then, he has written a book about another killer. And he also has no faith in God at all since all this. So, you know, people can do more research on him and, you know.
And let us know.
I'm interested in that book.
Yeah, I want to get it. I think I have it in my wish list.
Because I was, as you were talking about the women and the progression, I'm like, was he killing any of them? Did he kill any of them?
No, not that we know of.
Right.
Let me do a quick search on his book. Okay, it's called Reasonable Doubt.
Didn't they make a movie on
a
that?
A Story of Lust and Murder in the American Heartland. Oh, wait, no, this is about him by Steve Vogel.
What was the Peterson book called? Wasn't it similar to that title?
I don't know. It could have been.
I thought it was something.
Okay, this might be it. Here it is. Okay, so the book that he wrote is Tom Henry, Confessions of a Killer. In 1983, the author, a Christian businessman, arrived home from a sales trip to discover his wife and three children had been brutally murdered. A year later, he was convicted and sent to prison. He was innocent. Now, this is, of course, his book.
His life.
In prison, he met Henry Hillebrand, known as a card man because he sold homemade greeting cards. Henry told David an incredible story. In 1970, after murdering the woman he loved and the man he found her in bed with, he had executed a daring escape from jail by cutting through the cell block's iron cage and the bars of a window and rappelling from the third floor with a rope he braided from a sheet. During 13 fugitive years in Missouri, he had remarried, fathered two boys, defended himself in court, attempted suicide, converted to Christianity, and been recaptured by the FBI. In this book, the two imprisoned convicts endure riots, shakedowns, and gang extortion attempts, while the formerly godless murderer, now a believer, dictates his story to the formerly Christian family man, now a skeptic. Once one is trying to get his story out, the other is trying to get himself out. Throughout, the goodwill and humor of both men emerges. Early on, when David wants to write this book, Henry says, "Be careful what you wish for, Hendrix. When I was a child, I wanted bunk beds."
What's that mean?
I have no idea. What?
Not sure what that means.
I don't know what that means. Anyway, so that is the story. All right. So, Elena, I would like to know where you're at and your reasoning.
Yep. Guilty because of the timing of the food and when he was there, when he supposedly left, and then the progression of changes, appearance, and the progression of his behavior with the women.
Okay. Mom?
Well, obviously, I think he's guilty, but I don't think the evidence was enough to convict him because it was too wishy-washy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. It wasn't firm. They changed it as much as he changed his story.
Yeah. I'm going to agree with Mom. I think he was guilty. I don't think there was enough evidence to say for sure. I would have had reasonable doubt unless there were other things that came out. But I think guilt is pointed to by covering the face of his wife. A stranger on stranger probably wouldn't do that unless they wanted to give, like, buy time. And we're at nighttime, so he has plenty of time. The less injuries to Rebecca is interesting to me. And the food. I think it was very quick after they ate pizza. I think in plenty of time for them to go to sleep. And then they were killed. But I probably wouldn't have been able to convict.
Right.
I don't think the change in appearance and the increasingly aggressive behavior equals a family annihilator. But it would be a consideration.
Right.
But there's not enough. In the psychology, like, one of the questions I wanted answered so bad is, was he very methodical and like very thorough?
Because I bet he was.
If he was cleaning the fingerprints, cleaning the handle of the knife or the axe and the knife, that's just very indicative, I think, of maybe someone like him that invented a medical piece of
his profession.
Yeah.
In his profession, yeah.
And then not getting rid of the murder weapons, but putting them there because he owned them. Like, that is kind of interesting to me. But here's my question. Why two weapons? I don't get it. I don't know why he used two weapons.
Maybe he thought one would break. The axe.
I don't know. The only thing I could think of is the axe incapacitating the victims and then stabbing them. But why not a hammer? Or maybe he didn't want to be in such close proximity while he bashed his family's heads in. I mean, that could be where you have an axe that's longer, so you don't want to necessarily see what you're doing.
Was it a long axe or a hand axe?
Good question. Good question. Maybe he didn't have a hammer. Maybe he liked his hammer.
Right. Who knows?
He didn't want to. I don't know. It's just, why two weapons? Unless he, so if he did do it, because again, we're giving opinions. If he did do it, maybe he wanted it to look like there were two killers.
Well, that's true. But yeah, leaving him at the end of the bed, though, that's sort of puzzling.
Yeah, it is. Usually,
whether
just
you like
them.
It or not.
Or even drop them outside. I've heard of killers that carry them outside and then drop them.
Yep.
So I'd love to, you know, hear what our listeners think. You know, Mom, I really resent that I was trying to get Elena in trouble at work and you copped to the stash thing. I was trying to be an older sister and see if, you know, I could blame her for a crime she didn't commit.
Mom loves me more and has my back.
You should have just gone with it.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
I'm trying to be an older sister.
Well, I didn't want one in trouble.
Thank you.
Whatever. Whatever.
I would do the same
next
for you.
Next time I try to falsely know.
Same
no,
for
I
you.
Want, next time I try to falsely accuse my sister, you need to go with it. Remember,
all right.
It was her idea for me to make you believe that you were seeing things with the balloons and stuff. Just so you know.
That
just
was
so you
horrible.
Know. Just
had
so you know.
Had you not started laughing, I would have gone on with.
And
I
I'm
would,
really good at
it. It was
doing
weird,
that.
I'm telling you.
I'm too sweet.
And then Elena
that's
didn't have
my
back.
Whatever.
It's ridiculous.
Well,
I mean, she immediately was laughing, and I'm like, wow, I spent 4 hours expertly weaving the
in 2 days
fabricated
okay,
story.
I need a snack.
I need to pee. All right, so let's go, sister.
Be smart.
Be rude.
And don't be a victim. Outline of a Murder is a Mr. Joseph production. What do you think, Joseph?